So, hello everybody, welcome to Composer's Roundtable episode 9. I'm Samuel Tornquist, my co-host is Simeon Ambergy, and today we are honored to have the composer, pianist, teacher, and YouTuber Christopher Seo, if I pronounced that correctly.
Perfect, like see you later. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, just one thing, if you're watching this live, don't hesitate, you can always ask questions for Chris, and if we get to them, we will ask him for you. All right, so welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
For those who don't know you, could you let our audience know just a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure. And I guess my musical journey really started when I was 5 years old. As any typical Asian household would have it, they asked me, what instrument do I want to start with? And I started with piano naturally. And then I was classically trained up until maybe, 14, 15 years old. I was doing competitions and festivals and, did a lot of practicing, but I was never really like super into as much as probably other performers would be, like concert pianists, you know? And so when it came time to go to university, I was kind of deciding which program to choose. And one of my parents were saying, oh, choose a practical option, go into nursing. So I was like, okay, I'll do a year of nursing. So I did a year of nursing at McMaster University. And while I really enjoyed the community, the food was great and the people were amazing, the program itself wasn't really for me. So then I decided to switch out of that. And my other parent, my dad, really wanted me to follow my passion, music. And I was like, okay, well, let's do that instead. So I enrolled into classical piano performance, did that for 4 years. But even though I got my bachelor's degree in performance, throughout I was never truly, satisfied with that program. And so it was maybe during my second year where I started composing orchestral music and really started diving into logic and contact and understanding virtual instruments. And so I started doing that then, and then I started my YouTube channel. I think it was during my second year, and I was able to start uploading on a regular basis and start growing my channel. And it's just been a really wonderful experience getting to know so many people in the industry, connecting with developers and chatting with people like you, just all of it coming together in a really beautiful way. And so that's where we are today. And I'm really happy that I'm able to work on something I'm enjoying doing. Sorry.
You don't sound very excited at all about any of this.
I know, right? Like, I'm so dead, right?
Exactly.
That's great.
I'm a zombie.
So yeah. what university did you go to again? Did you say that when you studied?
University of Toronto.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You mentioned. All right. Cool. So how did you get into the whole, the DAW thing, the whole electronical thing? Or was that, is that sort of something they do nowadays or in the university?
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, that program itself, the classical piano performance, is very traditional. True to its name, it has, no technology stuff in it. But it was when I was in maybe high school, maybe 14, 15 years old. One of my friends is actually a DJ, and I was looking over his shoulder one day. I saw he was using Ableton Live, and I was asking him, like, what's going on? So I went over to his house. He showed me a couple things, projects he was working on, and I thought it was really cool. Like, you could produce music on your computer, and it sounds really interesting. And then another friend of mine was also kind of an improviser, and he played piano, and so he liked to come up with ideas all the time. So kind of merging that idea of improvisation, composing with electronic stuff on the computer, kind of bringing those together. And I started composing little piano ideas here and there, but maybe when I was in university, I switched over to Logic, and then I just started experimenting with the stock instruments. And soon after that, I kind of looked into Kontakt and the native instruments, and then it went on from there.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that you find the most appealing with this, basically?
Oh, I think it's just the fact that I think it's just the fact that you have so much control and possibility over the final product that you want to hear, especially with the technology and the instruments just sounding so good nowadays compared to, let's say, 10 years ago. There really is no excuse to have a subpar mockup, let's say, if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, if you're like a beginner and you're just starting out, then of course, every project we're learning more and more as the case for all of us. But I think just the fact that we have so much available to us nowadays that it's just so enjoyable to be able to say, oh, I would love if this violin played this note instead, or I want this to go up to this forte dynamic instead and then come down. And, you know, you can just control everything. Whereas in a live performance, sure, it definitely sounds more realistic and natural. But if they make a mistake, then you have to say, okay, can we do that take again? You know, all that
stuff. That is absolutely true. Did you get a chance to work with a real orchestra then at the university, or?
Not at the university because it was only piano based, unfortunately. Okay. But there was one class I was in called songwriting, and at the end we had a couple of people in the class who played different instruments, and so there was a violin player, a bass player, drum player. You know, so we were able to bring our songs to life in that class and kind of. Let the other instrumentalists collaborate with each other to try to produce something beautiful. So that was a lot of fun. But the only time I really heard my music performed live was when I put together a big band chart at the end of 2019. And it was like a Christmas medley. So I kind of brought to my high school's jazz band, and I realized I was kind of overshooting a little bit. Like I had a professional band in mind, so I wasn't really considering the high school level. And I definitely learned a lot from that experience. But it was definitely a lot of fun nonetheless, for sure.
All right. Awesome. Do you have any questions there, Simeon, about that?
Well, I'm just drinking it in. the thing, Chris, that I love about what you do and now to get to talk to you face to face, you know, is there's just a joyousness that just comes from deep down inside of you. And looking at some of your music videos, it's just like you just sense the joy that you have for music. There's just life and joy and hope that is embedded in what you do. I'm just curious, what do you think was like your like a defining moment for you as a musician up to this point, like something that really kind of like said this, you know, made you say, this is what I want to do, this is exactly the direction that I want to go. What was there a moment that you felt that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, probably when I still remember this moment pretty clearly, but when I was in high school, our music classroom, there were so many IMAX set up all around the room, and our music teacher, a lot of people didn't really enjoy his teaching style that much, because he would give us one thing to do and then he would play on his iPad, you know. But I personally loved him because I got to experiment with GarageBand on the iMac, and I was like, okay, you know, let's make up little piano things here and there. And I remember at the end of maybe 2 weeks of classes, I had like 40 little 30-second snippets of just piano tunes on the thing. And then soon after that, I had my first song that I ever wrote, and it was inspired by a band called Marianas Trench. And there was a lot of like modulations and stuff, and I was like, this is, you know, really cool. If I'm able to actually write something original, it feels so much more fulfilling than having to recreate someone else's music, which was, I guess, never something I just felt 100% passionate about. But ever since then, I think I really carried that passion forward. And it wasn't until the beginning of this year, you know, the end of 2019 2020, that I really felt that, I haven't written a song in a long time. I've done orchestral compositions, but for actual songwriting, I haven't actually written something with vocals and lyrics in a long time. And that was my first love in writing anyway. So that's when I decided to put together an album from start to finish. And I just learned a lot from that experience.
Actually, go ahead.
So 2020 was kind of like cathartic for you and kind of nudged you into that direction.
Absolutely. Like, yes. Yes. I would I say so. Go ahead. Okay. Yeah. I was just saying that when the pandemic started, at that point, I was teaching a lot of piano and theory. And I think at that point I had maybe 40 students a week or something, and it was taking up a lot of time, and I was starting to feel mentally drained, you know. And then it wasn't until the pandemic hit and the students had to, you know, take a break for a little bit. It gave me a little bit of time to reflect and say, okay, if I have so much more free time now, then I really have no excuse to, you know, relax and just lay back and do nothing. I really need to go all in on YouTube. I need to help more people. I need to make more music. I have to just develop my online brand and presence even more. And that was actually when I started doing a video a day for that month of March in 2020. Wow. And that kind of doubled the growth and made it more or less stay consistent throughout. But I'm planning on doing a similar thing next year, and we can talk about that later if you want. But I'm just, you know, while the pandemic is still going on, I do want to take advantage of the extra time that I have and share as much as I can in the time we have with us at the moment. So yeah.
Now, Chris, we're going to maybe do a little experiment here, but what was the, so do you have like the songs that you've done, they're on your YouTube channel. Is that correct? What was that first piece that you, do you have that posted on your channel?
Oh, the very first one. No, I would never show that to anybody. It's literal. It's trust me. You wouldn't want to hear it. Only my brother and my mom and dad have heard it, and I tend to keep it that way. But the rest of them, the earliest song I probably have is actually on another channel of mine, and the song is called Believe, and it's just inspired by Roger Federer, the tennis player, and. Okay. Yeah. That's like in the middle of my transition phase over to the orchestral side of things. You know, like, cause I was writing music 15, 16 years old, and then I kind of took a break, started university. And then I wrote this song and then took another break and then came this album. So if anyone is interested in laughing at me, that's a song to check out. But this album I'm much more proud of for sure. I feel
so
like
is that Freedom? More. Is that the album Freedom?
Correct. Yes, that's the
So
most
what would
one.
What would be like one of we can maybe try to look at one of your songs from that album. Which one would you think would be a good representation for us to start with?
Oh man, this is a tough one because I feel like every single song pulls from some influence in my life. But if I had to pick one, probably Once Again, because I've always wanted to do like a duet song. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the most like Disney style song of them all, if I had to say. And then the other ones are slightly different genres here and there. But overall, I've tried to get this sense of like hope and positivity and, you know, the sweeping nature of the orchestra in the album pretty much. But Once Again is probably one of my favorites, if I had to say.
Okay.
All right, so let's see if we can hear.
Yeah. Here we go.
Something there, so many things we shared. How did this fall and crumble down? You were there when I needed you, through the happiness and the blues. So why am I feeling so
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
that thank beautiful. You.
Very nice.
But her voice is beautiful.
Yeah, it does help when you have a good singer, doesn't it? But it's very good sound.
For sure.
Did you produce it as well? I mean, or mix and master it, or did you have help?
Yeah, so I basically did all the writing, music, the production, the orchestration, and then one of my subscribers actually offered to mix and master it. So
nice.
He pretty much did the whole album with the exception of one song.
But, awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where can you find this music except from on the YouTube channel that you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's all on YouTube, but it's also on Spotify. And, you know, Apple Music, wherever you consume music, it's
wherever music is sold. By
that's right.
Exactly.
With his latest release, Free Gold. You know.
Yeah.
Hope
yeah.
for tomorrow.
Love that.
Yes.
Beautiful voice. Yes. So, yeah, pretty much anywhere where music is. But I just wanted to make it, you know, freely available as well, just because I don't really use too many streaming services myself. So I know if when I search for music, it's usually through YouTube anyway.
But. Yeah. I just wanted to say, I mean, I really enjoy this. I found, for some reason, in some circles, Disney is a little bit derogatory, but I still want to use Disney because I really think you have that, and I mean it in a good way. I think because it is true. Whatever you think of Disney, it's true that they hire one of the best composers out there in terms of melody, like catchy stuff that really is engaging and emotive instantly. And I think you've nailed that, and it's really nice to hear. So
thank you so much.
So great work. I hope.
I think one of my favorite Disney musicals was Enchanted. Something about that. That movie, I love it. And those catchy things, I think what you bring to it is you bring your joy. And that's what, there's that joy and sense of hopefulness. And I think that's what that's the good part of Disney.
Yeah.
You know, when you wish upon a star, you know, it's always messages about hope and positivity and things. So the other side of Disney, not so much, but I love the movies and the you know, that part of it, which I think you're capturing it beautifully.
Yeah,
well, and also thank you so much. Yeah.
And I also want to add, it's good to write Disney, I just want to say, because I don't know, not you guys so much, which I'm very happy for, but a lot of musicians tend to be kind of gloomy and the dark and the sort of, it needs to be sort of sad music, which is nice too. And it's really good practice to write sort of, you know, Disney can be sad too, obviously, but to try to make something deep and meaningful, even though it's more joyful. So. Sorry.
Yes. I know for sure. No, I definitely agree with those. And come to think of it now, I mean, Alan Menken and Disney have definitely played a big influence, but so have, you know, some video game soundtracks like the Super Mario series like the Galaxy games are have some beautiful scores in there that really inspired me as well. But I think I've come to realize that you know, at the very beginning, I was probably a bit worried that I would end up imitating, you know, these people and it wouldn't be so original. And I actually did have a couple of people say, yeah, you kind of have that similar sound now, find your own voice. But I found that as I was writing this album and people started listening to it, they started saying, oh, Chris, there's a variety of styles in here, but they all sound like you. And that I don't know what that means. What kind of sound they're talking about, but at least if they can hear something that they can associate with me, then I know I've done something right.
No, I think you should take it all again. I do watch some Disney movies now again because I have small kids, and it's funny because I listen to them with a totally different ear because now I hear all the songs. I'm like, oh, damn, wow, that chord change was really cool.
That was
there.
Nice.
So I'm very impressed, and I realize that the guys who make music at Disney, they're good. It's like really good. The melodies and everything, it's just the theme they're finding, it's impressive. So you should just, you know, that you sound like anyone Disney, whatever, no problem. I'm not saying you do, but if somebody says that, so whatever.
Right.
You know, it's not, you know, by the way, I have a question for Tammy here, if that's okay. He says here, he was watching the interview you did with Anne Catherine Dern, which I watched a little bit as well. Maybe somebody we should have on someday. She's a great woman. And he says it was great to learn about your cooperation with her on the movie score. So are you at liberty to say what movie that was? He's asking.
Yes. The movie's called Her Pen Pal, and it was a Hallmark movie. And it should be freely available anywhere, I believe. I actually put together a video breaking down two of the cues I did for the film, actually. So that's on my channel as well. And yeah, if you're curious on watching it, it's a romantic comedy. I really enjoyed watching the movie, and I thought, like, sure, you could call it cheesy, but still, it was a lot of fun to watch and kind of work with. So, yeah.
Oh, well, I'll definitely check it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
You should say that, didn't you? Anyway. Yeah, but that was that question there. I wanted to, unless you had a question there, Simeon, I wanted to, why did you start a YouTube channel? I don't know if you mentioned that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually don't think I've ever been asked that question before, but I think when I discovered YouTube and it was starting to become like a thing, I guess I started to see people having channels and sharing their thoughts on things. And I was, you know, a young teenager at that time, so I was still pretty impressionable, and I've always wanted to create a channel myself. So my very first YouTube channel, I believe, was, a card trick channel. And I did a lot of like magic tricks when I was younger, and that was a lot of fun. And then started like a tennis channel where I uploaded like occasional highlights of me playing with friends. And then I uploaded like a piano only channel where I just upload piano performances. But I guess, yeah, while I was in university, I was like, okay, I kind of discovered that I wanted to write music and wanted to do more composing and orchestration stuff. And none of those channels really fit into that theme. And I was like, okay, I want a fresh start. I'm just going to call it my name, and it's going to all be all about the music making process. And it was around that same time that I also discovered a business channel from a guy who's basically made a living from doing YouTube and selling courses and stuff. And it just really changed my perspective on how money can be made on YouTube at the same time sharing with other people and adding value to other people. And so that really kickstarted that journey there. And it just gave me a vision to look forward to after I graduated from my program.
Mm. Yeah, it does seem to help actually to have a YouTube as well, because you have to produce more. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I had written a piece of music and I was like, well, this is like a Nintendo inspired piece, and none of my other channels really align with that vision. So I started the channel, put it up there, and then just, you know, started making videos from there. So.
Do you actually think that it's are we still back? Yeah. Some audio. Simeon disappeared. He might come back. Yeah. So the question was, do you actually think it's necessary to have a YouTube channel today if you want to be a composer?
I guess it really depends on what you want to do with the channel and where you see yourself in the future, you know. The thing I would recommend is that most people, or actually every musician or composer, if they want to have some sort of opportunity to compose in the future for some film or TV or whatever it is to have some sort of online presence. And YouTube is really, for me, the best way to do that, because whatever content you put out there, it is evergreen and it stays on the platform forever. If you put something on Instagram, it gets caught up in the wash of content and it just fades away after a little bit. But the general idea of YouTube for me is that if I can upload content that helps people and they want to see more of what I have to offer, then I have other resources behind the door that I can offer them in exchange for an email address, for example. So I can contact them privately and offer them things that they might appreciate even further. But for the people who are just looking around and they want to get a sense of, oh, how do I write a piece of music, or how do I orchestrate something? How do I write this file online? Then there are plenty of YouTube videos available to help you with that. But as a composer yourself, I think it's important to just, even if it's just posting your own music on the channel and then having some sort of consistent output, that can keep you top of mind for directors or, you know, whoever it is, editors looking for some music, for example. And if they show up when they're looking for music, then there's a higher chance of them hiring you compared to if you didn't have anything up there in the first place, you know, sort of online presence, whether that's on YouTube or even SoundCloud or whatever it is. If you're consistent with it and you treat it as part of your routine, then I think you're already setting yourself up much better for success compared to, let's say, 95% of other composers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to agree. What do you think, Simeon?
Getting yourself into as many platforms as you can, because it's just so crowded. This space is so crowded. And so you have to kind of get a little bit above the crowd sometimes. But having the different flows, kind of help maximize that a little bit better. Speaking of your online presence, you mentioned something about offering other things to users. And so would you like to talk about your website as far as, you know, some of the things that you're doing with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the beginning of, I guess, last year was when I really started to go super deep into the channel, make sure that everything I was putting out was relevant and helpful and valuable. And I was starting to get a lot of questions like, do you have something that's more in depth and that kind of puts everything together in a specific framework? And so that made a lot of sense for me to put a course together. And so I called it cinematic music creation. And it's basically like my flagship course that kind of goes from like the very beginning to the end of coming up with your ideas and then understanding the music theory of how to apply those ideas, developing, you know, your idea, your compositions and so on, and then producing it, orchestrating it, mixing, mastering it. So it's basically how I would approach the whole music making process. So that's the one that I mainly offer for the new people that join me. And excuse me, there's also like a discount as well. Mm-hmm. Wow. For those new subscribers. Mm. But yeah, and I'm planning on some other material for next year. But at the moment, Songwriting for Animation is another course that specifically focuses more on the Nintendo Disney style of writing, which nice. I'm of course very passionate about. And then I just recently launched Chris's Composing Community.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's true.
I'm just like, man, there's just so much here. I mean, I keep scrolling down. It's like more things pop up. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
I should clarify. Hey,
listen,
I am
already a subscriber, so I need to send you an email so I can get some, you know, get into this.
Oh, absolutely. It's thank you.
Very exciting. Yeah. Very exciting.
Well, those bottom five on the page, those are actually little mini courses that are actually pulled from cinematic music creation. Because some people were asking, you know, can you take some of those individual modules out? Because maybe I'm just interested in the theory part or just the orchestration part. So I've done that for now. That might change in the future as I start to upgrade the product line more. Mm-hmm. But if there is, you know, any way that you want to go deeper and just see everything in a very structured order, because that's the thing about YouTube is you can talk about something, but it's like a 10, 15, 30 minute video and you can't cover everything. Mm-hmm. So the benefit of course is that, you know, of course it takes you all the way through from start to finish. Yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's very clever to do it that way. Actually, I just want to ask, you have such lovely energy and your music is very joyful and you have time to do all this stuff and you have 40 students. How do you get the energy? I mean, so I was wondering, do you do something? You have a routine? Do you take care of yourself? Or how do you do it?
yeah, that's great. I guess maybe the beginning of this year, I was trying to be more disciplined with myself. And so I would wake up at, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock, and I would try to get in a workout before actually starting the day. Mm. And I found that, you know, when you actually do a workout, if it's not overly strenuous, but, you know, you do some cardio, you do some strength training, then it helps you to kind of get your creative juices flowing as well. And so when it comes to actually working or arranging, producing, whatever it is, you just feel better, right? Mm. And so it naturally gives you some better results. So I definitely want to stay more consistent with that. And it's kind of been on and off, but I found that on the days that I do exercise and I do eat better, then the work and the overall energy is definitely higher than if I didn't do it.
Do you take coffee?
Yeah.
No, well, I'm so obsessed about it because I love coffee, but my stomach can't handle it. So I'm like I'm trying these different things, like once a week or something, you know. And for me, it's like a drug. I'm totally addicted, but I can't do it. I can't do it. But I do feel that extra energy and the creativity from it. So that's why I call it a drug, even though it's quite light, you know.
Obviously. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
You could take a bag of coffee beans and just.
Yeah, maybe. Wow. Seriously, I should do that.
Just do it that way. Well, I've got to ask this question, Chris. Is like, are you single?
I am single. Yes.
So you know what? That in single. Itself explains a lot. You know. So
right.
That explains a lot. So yeah. So you know. So life has a tendency to put many demands on, and so. So that's that answers a lot right there, but
true.
I wouldn't
recommend kids either. I mean I would recommend kids, but not if you want to be composer. That's that's hard to have time
right,
with, so.
Right.
Unless your last name is Von Trapp, then you would be in good shape, you know.
There you go.
That's
there
true
go.
That's true.
Yeah, well,
but I love
it's
what
funny you
said.
Bring that up. Yes.
Well
go ahead.
I love
sorry
what you, well, go ahead and finish that point, and I'll follow up with the.
Okay.
With this
okay.
Thing.
Yeah. No, I was just saying that. I guess it actually goes back to that point of it really depends on what you want to do as a composer. Like, do you want to really work for AAA stuff, or do you just care about getting your music out in the world and not having the pressure of having to meet those deadlines on a consistent basis? You know, because for me, production music and library music. as lucrative as it can be, it requires such discipline and such consistent output that that's something like I could never do, because I know it is such a grind, and sometimes you have to put out like 4, 5, 7 tracks a week just to keep up with, you know, the demands of the bills and whatever it is, that I personally feel that it would probably drain the creative energy that I have and choose for my own personal work. So it's kind of at the point where I'm trying to find a balance between putting out music just because I feel like I haven't done something in a while versus something I want to actually put out. And it just depends on like what you really feel like, where you want your life and career to go in music.
I think it's a very good point. I can talk about myself and many others that there's a tendency sometimes, I need to do this. And so do we strain too much to do that. But there's so many ways you can do music in your life. And maybe you just like to compose music, but you can do other things with music or other work, if that's possible, in order to support yourself. It doesn't have to be that to be your work, you know, to make your main thing, and because that, as you said, it can really kill you. I agree with that. It's difficult,
for sure. Yes.
But it's good to get that wake up call, because sometimes you can be really stuck on, I gotta do this way, you know. So
yeah,
it can feel tough to admit that, but yeah, to say.
And it's just finding out who you are, who you are in the grand scheme of this world, who you are in the world, what you want to be, what influence you want to be in the world, and so. It's like you've got all of these different things pulling at you, but where do you find the most joy, the most satisfaction? And so it's not, I keep going back to God loves a cheerful giver. If you're doing things begrudgingly, or, you know, somebody just whipping you all the time, you know, the joy and the purpose, just gets sucked out of it. You know, you are at a point now where it seems like that, you're still just finding it, but you are you're right in this zone here that just is just really wonderful, which you can hear. Don't ever lose that. See, we were talking today, you can grow old and grow bitter, or you can grow old and keep the joy. And it's like, God help us to always not let life crush us to the point where we lose our joy. Chris, protect what you have, protect that joy and that spark that you have, because that is something that career and money and opportunities can never equal the value of, nothing can equal that. So, and I love the fact that you're into teaching. You were talking about your band teacher and the experiences you had in school. And so we need to really just keep putting it out there that music education in elementary and middle school and high school, those moments are what define put the spark into us as musicians. And we've got to support that. And I'm so glad that you you're doing that in your teaching. And so that's just a wonderful. Thank you. Wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. You're an inspiration to keep us all going here.
No, that's very, very kind of you. And you know what? I have to say that I think if my parents actually pushed me into songwriting or pushed me into composition, I might have a totally different look on it today. Whereas, because I know for piano, there were definitely those moments where I was sitting there and I just, my teacher or my mom wasn't too happy with the way I was approaching a certain note, right? Mm. And then she was like, okay, play this 20 more times, you know, come on, you have to do this. It's those moments where you're like, what am I doing? You know, but I was like maybe 7, 8 years old. So I didn't, you know, understand it too well. But nowadays it's at that point where my mom sees that I'm kind of making some sort of living from music and I'm starting to increase the online business. So she's like, you know, nothing makes me happier than being proved wrong. And from my traditional mindset, I know, or I believe that it's really hard to make money in music, but if you know the ways to actually do it in a, you know, ethical, healthy way, then things start to open up for you.
Yeah. I believe that too.
There's great rewards. There's great rewards in doing what you love.
Yes.
So what? Let's listen to another song if we. Let's try to listen to another song if we can.
Sure.
I just want to say, obviously, go and check out the songs also on Chris' YouTube channel so you get the full quality. Because here we get a little bit of Skype quality. It's all right.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, if you want to hear the whole
Skype quality
real thing, you know, you have to go to his
Skype
channel.
Quality.
Yeah.
Love it. Oh, that's a new new
speaking
right
about
there.
The Spark, is that one on your new recording?
Yes. So Spark is actually the lead single from the album. That one is probably the another kind of like Disney one there as well. Yeah. I have to say Get Out is probably my other favorite. It's a big band song.
Okay.
It's all too much for me. Nearly impossible to see. What could be on the other side? When my hands are tied. Every day just feels the same. When nothing else inside has changed. Oh, what's the point in trying? When my heart is slowly dying. But deep down inside, a flame burns bright and warm. Can't go any further, my emotions are torn. Just take a deep breath, close my eyes and believe in me. Let's take the leap together and see what lies ahead. Push away the darkness and look up instead. You'll find the spark you always knew. In your soul, 'cause when you do, the world will know.
I just had to get to that hook. Yeah, we just had to get to the hook. Yeah,
the suspense.
Is that you singing, Chris?
Yeah.
Nice, guys, a multi-talented guy there. And who's making the video?
No.
Sorry.
Yeah. So I basically had three videos made for the songs, three lyric videos, and I basically hired three people on Fiverr to do it, Fiverr.
Okay, yeah.
So,
yeah, that's a smart idea.
So you had a good experience with that?
Yeah. I think it really comes down to reading the reviews and just making sure the quality of work is what you would want for your piece. So, yeah, if the style is the way you like it, and also if the reviews are relatively solid, 4 to 5 stars, then... Mm. You know, I'm all for taking that chance.
Yeah, that turned out well. Yeah, it was nice.
Very good.
Thank you. I like them. Yeah.
Really good. I was going to go a little bit the other way here. Or if you have this experience, so what is the most difficult and most dreadful part about being a composer?
Okay, give me a second. I think the worst feeling is probably the feeling of not having any ideas and just feeling stuck. Like, what's the point of doing this? Mm. And sometimes we feel like there's no point in continuing because there's no end goal in sight. And especially when you're trying to write something and nothing is just coming out, that's probably the worst feeling. Maybe you could say, more practically, maybe there's financial strains on the job in particular, but I think let's just say you have things set up in a relatively comfortable way in terms of, you know, where you are in life and all that. If you're just trying to write a piece of music and nothing's coming, that's the worst feeling. And contrarily, if something is coming and it just feels really nice and comes out really easily, then that's the best feeling. But I've tried my very best to avoid any really bad or uncomfortable situations as much as possible. So I'm probably not the best person to answer that question. Just probably not mature enough to really experience the worst of what composing has to offer us, you know?
Perhaps, but also, I mean, I would turn it around and say it's great to have you. You're very inspiring. So that maybe is a good thing as well, you know, that maybe it's not that bad to be a composer. But have you had, I think, you
said something really key with what you said was that you try to avoid those situations. So that takes some intuitiveness and some thoughtfulness is about reading the situation. Like, you know, it's almost like the radar. You've got to have a radar saying, well, this job looks good, but there's a little something I don't think so. So you have, you are at the moment now where you can be very selective. And so, and this, the way the music world is today, it is nothing like it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And so you have the advantage of starting in this new world, so to speak, of music production, music distribution, collaboration, all of this stuff. So I really admire that, because you know there is a maturity that I hear already that you know, that you try to avoid things that you sense would not be productive or would put you in a negative situation. So
thank you. Well, it's interesting you say that. I think generally, like if I'm working on a piece of music and I feel that maybe my ears are getting tired or it doesn't feel productive anymore, then I'm more than happy to step away and take a break, because I'm sure there are many people who just want to push you and get that thing done, you know? And for me, I'm just anticipating that the feeling of burnout and just not wanting to do it anymore, that's such a painful feeling, and that makes you question everything. That's something I actively try to avoid. So yeah, if I'm feeling like I'm on the verge of just not being productive anymore, then I step away. Or if no ideas are coming to my mind, like to write something new, then I just won't do it for a little bit. But again, that's kind of unfair to say for someone who's doing it for a living because I'm with ideas. So I'm not in that position, but as someone who is not writing music solely for a living, that's one luxury I do have, is, you know, not having to strain myself and push myself to write every single day, you know, and really only commit to it if inspiration strikes.
But I still think that it's extremely healthy, and I think it's very good, even if you work if making music only, because stepping away doesn't just mean to abandon. It can also be in, you know, for 5 minutes or half an hour or a few days. I wonder a little bit, do you have any idea why you have this very mature and healthy attitude? Because if you beat yourself down to it, like, I'm going to do this, that's actually being a little bit stuck in something, you know, you can't see the big picture. And I wonder, do you think it's any discipline, any practice you did, or just a happy childhood? I don't know.
That's a great question. I think it's a combination of many things. Like when I was growing up doing piano lessons, and believe me, there were many good moments where I was able to play pieces I loved and all that. But I do remember the feelings of maybe this more stressful moments and the ones where I just didn't want to be there. And so maybe that has to do with me trying not to put myself back in that similar situation of doing it just because I feel like I have to do it, you know? And also the fact that when I am teaching, or for example, or if I'm sharing some information, then from the other person's perspective, the consumer, I wouldn't want to put them in a position where they feel like they have to be there just because there's the information on screen. Like, I want them to feel like, oh, I'm watching this because this information is actually interesting, or this music actually sounds cool, you know? So I want to put a little bit of a different spin on education in that way, where I know some more traditional teachers are much more strict and they definitely get the results that way. But I'm a big believer in that, especially if we're composing and creating in general, you can't really force that. You can't really push someone too much to actually do something, because at the end of the day, it's creativity and it's original. Also, the best you can do is guide someone to do it.
You can bring a horse to a piano, but you can't make him play a sonata. You know,
there you go. Love it. That's perfect.
You have to write the book, Sammy, and all these quotes, man.
I know.
Sounds good.
You're on fire today.
Maybe we should turn around. So, what is the best? Maybe we said it already, but what is the best part about being a composer then?
Yeah, I think the best part is just being able to impact people with your music. And of course, this has to come with, you know, having an audience to share it with. But even if you don't, and you feel like you have something to say with your music, and maybe there's no monetary gain in it, but as long as you can share your music to the world, and even one person says, "Oh, that really touched me in a way," or I love that the way this music sounded here, or that was a really interesting progression, or those lyrics really stood out to me, you know, that makes it all worth it, you know. So if you don't have those pressures of trying to music for the sake of music, and instead you're doing it, you want to do it and put it out there in the world for people to appreciate, then I think that's the most genuine and natural music you can create. And that's what I think the best feeling is, probably just to, you know that your music is making some sort of difference in the world, you know.
Nice.
That's it. You could have all the money in the world, you could have, you know, all these different jobs and stuff, but if you're not enjoying it, then what's the point, you know?
Yeah,
very nice.
Very good.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about, if it's okay, maybe you could talk a little bit about, we have shown your courses a little bit, but it's, maybe you can talk a little bit about what you can find in those courses, perhaps, or
a quick, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, currently I have two main courses. I have the cinematic music creation course, which is, again, the entire like process that I put together of how I would personally structure, like, let's say a curriculum in creating orchestral music from start to finish. So it starts off with like a specific mind when it comes to, you know, basics of music theory, some intermediate stuff, goes into how I take those music theory concepts and apply them to composition, and then goes to, he's got them pulled up there. I forgot to mention and then the tools there, like what you need. That's module 2, and then music theory, composition, orchestration, and then actually applying those to a real composition and doing a live mock-up and then mixing and mastering that. So it's literally just a full start to finish program that I kind of brainstormed to put together over the course of, I think it was 5-6 months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's probably my most popular course so far. The other one is currently closed to the public, but I am planning on opening up for Black Friday and probably doing a little sale for that as well. So that one is a little more niche. It talks more about like the Disney Nintendo style of writing and kind of breaks down the whole a whole bunch of like hit songs and describes what's happening in there. And then the composer community is more like it's a community. Like there's a bunch of composers in there, and comes out, there's also like a live chat and a Q&A thing, track feedback sessions, and it's more hands-on, if you will. So that one is also something I'm actively working on as well. But I'm planning on launching one more course this year, and then I have a couple more planned out for next year to just continue to grow and build as and help as many people as possible. So that's the whole idea.
That looks great.
Yeah, sorry.
I love how the course takes you all the way through to even making the thumbnails. I just was seeing that, you know.
Oh yeah. The,
you know, just you know, very, very concise and detailed.
Thank you. Really enjoy it. Yeah. I mean, I can kind of share a little bit on also the kind of the way the business model works if anyone is interested. So, I mean, generally when you're putting something out there in the world, especially on YouTube, the whole idea of the platform is that the content will stay on as long as you don't delete it, right? But even one piece of content can attract a lot of people if it's relevant enough and valuable enough. And so the best thing to do to build some sort of audience and a dedicated case to see your subscriber number grow, but to also develop an email list. So the best way you can do that is to develop some free offering that people would really find valuable. In my case, I always share like a guide that I think would help that person so they can download it. And then I now have the option to contact them privately, give them more stuff, or offer them, you know, one of the courses. And it's just a more personal relationship that way, rather than just replying to YouTube videos or, you know, doing other things like that. I think being able to contact someone privately is so, so important, especially in today's day and age.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great.
Do you have any, I think you have I don't know if I remember you had a PDF or something, but do you have any, if somebody's starting out doing this, do you have any good recommendations?
Yeah.
Like I need an orchestra if I want to do similar stuff to what you do, like a good start setup that's not too nasty for the bank.
Oh, absolutely. That's literally the reason I created the guide that's in the description. It's called the Composer's Toolkit, but it basically goes through like the most basic fundamental stuff you need to kind of get orchestral composition. So it talks about, you know, the computer, the DAW, the interface, the external drives, the sample libraries. I think if I was to recommend a starting orchestra, there's so many more options nowadays, but I think Berklee orchestras could be pretty good. I don't actually have it myself, but the collaboration with Berklee could be pretty good.
Orchestral
Tools. Yeah, yes. The new one. Yeah. And then I know that Nucleus is pretty highly regarded from Audio Imperia, although I don't think it's a complete orchestra, right? I think there's, you know, a lot of stuff in there, but and then there's also, you know, Spitfire's BBC, which I don't have experience with, but heard good things about that too. Cine Symphony Light's great for the full ensemble stuff. But I think ultimately, I from my perspective, I like to start off with the full suite from the very beginning. If I know I'm going to dedicate myself to this, if you're just starting out and you're not really sure if you want to do orchestral stuff, then for sure get an all-in-one. But if you know that you want to do it for the long run, then get yourself a full suite of dedicated live.
I agree.
As I'm sure we probably could all agree. And Cine Samples, Cine Brass is great. Cine Perk, I really love too. And Cinematic Studio Strings, of course. But I try to keep it pretty simple. Like, I don't have 70 string libraries just because I don't have the hard space for it, hard drive space. But also, I would just get so easily overwhelmed. I'm such a simple person, you know. So the less is more concept applies to me quite a bit.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I'm starting to think about that too. Now, I don't have so many libraries, but I have still too many. I'm almost starting to look if I can sort of take away a few, because it's overwhelming for sure. But let's say, what are your absolute, you kind of answered it, but what are your best libraries? You know, that this one favorite, is the one. Yeah.
My absolute favorites. let's see. Strings, it would have to be CSS and probably Vista from Performance Samples for the style of music that I do. Those libraries are just perfect. Woodwinds, I would say Cinematic Studio Woodwinds and Berlin Woodwinds, I would probably still say are, for me, the
Berlin,
best. And I'll definitely do a cut on those two. For brass, Cine Brass and Cinematic Studio Brass, I would say probably. And then for percussion, Cine Perk is really the main library I'm using, but for something a little more heavy, then maybe Damage 2 as well. But you'll notice that, generally I try to limit myself to one or two per section, because, less is more. And, for harps, Cine Harps is great. For piano, Cine Piano. So a lot of Cine Sample stuff. For runs and stuff, Hollywood Winds is great. Cine Samples again. And Cine Strings Runs is great. And Berlin Strings is actually great because it has this playable runs patch as well, which is really cool. They have these sampled legato transitions that are really fast. But did I miss anything? Any section? I don't know.
You left out a few Cine Sample libraries.
Whole suite.
Yeah, exactly. I do want to say, I actually got the advice from you about the Hollywood Winds. And even though that is sort of, I don't know what to say, less complex library, you could say. No, it's still amazing. It's really, really good. I mean, I was blown away. It's not all the details of solo instruments, but if you just want a section, I think that's one of the best. Seriously. And it's, is it, $99 when it's not on a sale or something
like that, or at the most $149 or something. But I think it's usually within $200 for sure. So something crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely good. Yeah, there are many. I'm looking into it. There's always that syndrome that you feel like you need to buy a new library because you don't sound good enough.
And, right. I can totally agree with that. Yeah.
But in terms of
gas is such a
But for me, it's the workflow, though. Do you find that there's a library that is easier and quicker to work with? I don't have too many of Performance Samples yet, but I like it, I have to say. What do you think?
Yeah, like Performance Samples is super easy to use, and I think that's part of Jasper's ideology for his libraries. It's just, it's not for purists. It's not for people who want to tweak and, you know, get really into the hood, but just plug and play, and that's all it is. And iStudios is a very similar thing. You know, they just have one GUI and literally just click on articulation, you go. And I love that they map both the expression and the dynamics to the mod wheel. So you have the dynamic layers and the the, let's say, vibrato and, you know, the overall volume all mapped to the mod wheel. So you don't really have to fiddle too much and you just plug and play and it just sounds great. You might have to do some EQ compression afterwards, but overall it's a very consistent and very playable set of instruments. CineSamples took me a little bit of time to get used to just the way their mapping was, but for me, the sound was worth it. So that was fine. And then for OT, I really only use their single instrument patches. So those were easier to use, but for the multi-patches, it definitely took me more time to get my head around and they're a little more CPU intensive as well. So nowadays I just stick with the Cinematic Studio stuff and CineSamples stuff just because it's not overly heavy. And it just makes the workflow faster for me. So,
Yeah, that is important for sure. Yeah. Simeon, what do you use? Oh, you don't.
Oh. Well, I have a lot of Spitfire libraries, of course. Working with them has been a great, but I did hear CineSample Sonore, which was their horns. And man, those sounded just fabulous. Yeah. And I think one of the things that the CineSamples has recorded in that MGM scoring stage, and I think that the stage and the recording environment, it really has a lot to do with the overall sound and personality of the library. It's not just the players or the way you sample or the articulation. It's the room that everything is captured in. So, you know, with CineSamples, you've got MGM. With Orchestral Tools, you've got the Teldec stage. With Spitfire, you've got Air Lyndhurst and then Matavale with the BBC Orchestra. And so it's good in a way, I guess, to you know, keep everything in similar rooms, I guess, because I guess you would run into issues. But most of the stuff is like the things that I have are mostly the Spitfire libraries. But I do love what I'm hearing from performance samples. There's just something there that you can't put into a GUI. You hear it. And that's like with Vista, some of the things I was hearing, the demos with Vista, it was like, oh my goodness, it's just very beautiful. Incredible. So, so he is not so much focused on the technical aspects of things rather than just the feeling that you get when you're listening to those sounds.
But there's something about really that, you know, if you put less money into the UI, you know, and more into the sound, maybe that's actually where the money should go. I kind of agree with that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I remember when I tried their solo violin and I'm so used to tweaking, you know, day, night. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was just playing, hey, this sounds good immediately. I don't have to do anything. Is something wrong?
I know.
It's just... And
all of these different things that, you know, all of these different things, do I market it real heavy and cheapen out on this, or do I what do you focus on? What do you value the most? And then that's reflected, with what you basically hear, in the end, at the end of the day. So,
if I may, there's that brings up such an interesting topic about advertisements and marketing, like you were saying. We know there are some companies that really invest heavily into the marketing, not only because, you know, they just want to get their product out there, but because they have the means to, and it helps their business, their bottom line. So, you know, why not? But I definitely appreciate and respect the developers, especially who don't focus too much on that. And again, like we said, focus on getting the best sound, the best playability, just the best product out there possible. And the people who are really looking for those gems, those are the people who are going to be really rewarded with those. And you know, they just build their own reputation that way, you know. But that's one of the reasons why, you know, even though I sell courses and stuff, not many people know about it unless they know my content on my YouTube channel. I've never done a single Facebook or YouTube ad because I think content is a better way of attracting people. It's their choice if they want to see something I made. I'm not forcing
Chris,
myself
back up,
them
back up and say
and
that
saying, like,
back up
check
and
out
say,
the course.
Say that one more time.
We missed you there for a second.
What did I
if you
say?
Could say the last two sentences.
About
not running Facebook ads.
Yes. I was just saying, so I've never run a Facebook and YouTube ad just because I feel like content is a much better way of putting myself in front of someone. And
agreed.
It's pretty much them looking for something that I made rather than me putting and forcing myself into what they're doing. You know, I don't want to interrupt their experience. I want them to be actively looking for something. And if they come across my stuff and they like it and they want to go further, perfect. If not, no worries. You know, you got something for free. We both win. You know, I helped you and you got something. Then why not? You know, it's fine.
I kind of agree. There's something to that you do. If you're really interested, you will search for it, and then you're probably a better client, I don't know what to say, rather than somebody who's just clicking through your video because they don't have the attention span. They're not for you anyway. So I agree.
Exactly.
The relationship's going to be more meaningful in the end. You know,
yes.
It's wonderful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's I just wanted to say again, I mean, it doesn't really matter, but when you talked about sound, it is true. I don't know why. This is a personal thing. I very much agree in the libraries you talk about, but I don't know why I don't have a lot of these libraries, but I really always like the sound from Cine Samples. I'm like, everything is just, people say that the strings are dark or whatever, and they're a little tricky to work with, but the sound, I just love it. I think it's really, really good.
Yeah.
So it has, there's something about that, even though
it's libraries are super bright. Yeah. It's super open. It's just full. It has that body to it. It's just clean, you know. It doesn't feel like it's overly hyped in the highs. The lows are controlled. You know, they like even with Hollywood Winds, which was their second library, they nailed the sound in a church. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. They just have the ear for good samples. So it's interesting to see what they'll do this or next year, because I think they're revamping or at least introducing a new line, right?
Looks so like it. Yeah, we'll their website is updating. Goes. So probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. It's true. And Aldi, I just wanted to mention, in terms of working fast, I used to use them many years ago. It's Project Sam's libraries. And they're obviously a little bit towards a certain genre and all that. But it's actually a nice library in terms of you want to get quick results that sound good. You don't have to. And it's not maybe for purists either, I would say. It's more of a,
I could agree with that. Yeah, I think I mainly use their libraries for my jazz stuff. So I have the Swing and Swing More stuff, which I don't use all too often, but I always use the double bass, and the piano from Swing More is definitely a great little instrument for a big band arrangement as well.
Well, actually, the Swing More is really good for if you're into... We forgot to say that you do big band as well, don't you? A little bit. You have some jazz background.
I do, yeah. It was always like more of a, I don't want to say guilty pleasure because there's nothing to be guilty about, but it was one of my musical pleasures as well. Get Out is another song on the album that's the only big band song on the album, but I definitely had the most fun performing that one for sure.
You want to take a listen to that one real quick?
Just sure.
Let's do that.
before we say goodbye, and let's just kind of see what we can do. We can have some more fun with this. Hold on. Let me see.
Which
one was
Get Out? No, seriously, Get Out. No, not like that. Don't you know what you're missing? Just take a peek outside. Does that make more sense? No? Well, let me tell you what I mean. Get out. It's the best before you get out. Do you wanna look at the sky? Watch the birds fly. You got some gray on ya, start looking alive. Get out. The sky is bluer than the ocean tide. You see the children laugh when they sing all the joy that they bring. So get out and soak it all up. I see it in your tired eyes when the clock ticks while you're stuck inside. I'm afraid of what happens to you. You wanna scream, just take a breath. It's not as bad as it seems. Get out. Every day you gotta get out. Have you seen the folks saying hi? Oh, don't be shy. Reach out and introduce yourself with some pride. Get out. All we gotta do is get outside. Why don't you get out? Start making plans. Have some fun in the sand. Oh, wouldn't that be so grand?
I almost thought I heard a modulation. So,
yeah.
So it's like
that's coming up.
Very good,
Chris. I can't tell. Is that a real orchestra or a library? I can't tell. I'm honest. Honestly.
Yeah. So the horns and the brass are all real players. Yeah.
I thought
so.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that's a very good library.
It was, Yeah, I know. Yeah. It would take me way too long to program that and get like half the results. So it was much easier to just hire people. The only mock-up stuff there was the double bass from Swing and the piano from Swing More. But the drums were live, the guitar was live, and all the horns were live too. Actually, the snaps were also sampled.
The first thing we ask when we hear something, what libraries did you use on that?
Exactly.
I did, and it was like real people, you know.
I know. That's
great.
It's a fun one. Yeah.
So we have run just about an hour right now. We tried to keep it that time. I just wanted to ask Simeon or Christopher if you have any more questions, anything you want to add or anything we haven't touched on that is important.
No, this has just been just so refreshing and such a joy to to spend this time with you. And I'm going to check out, I want to send you an email. I want to check out some of those courses because one of the things is that you never stop learning. Mm. You never stop learning. You will pick up different things from different people, different personalities. Every one of us has a different life story, a journey, and it brings something different, and it's something that we can learn from each other and pick up, and you know, that's the beauty, I think, of what we have available to us now is to be able to exchange ideas and to be open to new ideas, to do so, be open to doing stuff differently, and I would really suggest to expose. If you're looking at composing, expose yourself to courses like Chris's and find what resonates with you, because somebody is going to really connect. And to be honest, not everybody's going to connect, but there might be one or two points that do, and that's worth the journey. So
thank you.
Very, very happy to meet you, Chris,
and
look forward to what's coming. And I've subscribed and I clicked those notifications, and so I can't wait to see and hear what you come up with next.
Yeah, and I also want to say I do have one of Chris's courses, I really recommend it. It's very good. And I just want to say, if you like what you see now, Chris is a very likable person. I mean, that's what you get in the course as well. So something to think about. And he's very clear and it's very well put out. So that's something I recommend. And I also find that it's not, maybe I shouldn't say this, but it's a reasonable price. So if you feel like you don't can afford a teacher too much, this actually is, this is a good option. I don't want to say it's cheap or anything. It's not that. I'm not trying to sell you out, but really it's a good value proposition. I'm ruining this, but it's a very good course and it's worth the money. So look into it.
Well, thank you so much, both of you. I mean, first of all, it was a pleasure speaking with you both, and just chatting about music is always fun. But if anyone else is interested in the course, feel free to just download any of my guides and any of my videos. Hopefully that resonates with you, and then you'll get a nice offer there. But generally, I think it's just important, like you guys were saying, to really find something that you really are interested in and just continue learning, because there really is no end to that. And that's something I have to keep telling myself too, is just when I get bored and I feel like I'm not motivated, I know that there's always something else that I could be learning and just, you know, keep picking up on. But it's always a balance. Like, do you want to keep working? Do you want to take a break? Do you feel productive or not? At the end of the day, you know, music is something that you just can't control your inspiration for and creativity. You know, we're all on the journey together. So we're all taking it one day at a time. So, you know,
yes,
it's fun.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much for joining us, Chris. And thank everybody for listening. If you're watching on YouTube, very, very much would appreciate the like and the comment. Perhaps letting us know topics and guests. Yeah, he's back. So, and if you listen on the podcast, if you can still hear me, we would very much appreciate it if you could give us a good rating. Again, great thanks to Chris. We have links to his channel and courses in the description, and we very much recommend to check his stuff out. So until next
time,
thanks
for having me, guys.
Go write some good music and take care, everybody.
Bye.